You're ready.
Okay. Afternoon, everybody. Call to order the State Department Finance and Veterans Budget Division, Tuesday, February 19th, 2013, and it's about 3:08. Quorum is present. Today, members, we have three budget reviews to be presented in committee, management, budget, revenue, and minute. And in your packets, you'll find the agenda, spreadsheet, change items, handouts from the respective jurisdictions. With that, we'll begin with Commissioner Showalter. And Commissioner, as always, if you'd state your name for the record, and then go ahead and start. We also have, with Commissioner Showalter, we have Chief Financial Officer of MMB, Dennis Munkwitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of MMB. And with me, as you said, is Dennis Munkwitz, our CFO. We have other members of our leadership team here as well to answer any questions that might come up over the course of this presentation. Appreciate the chance to reacquaint you with our agency, some of the things that are going on, and particularly the budget recommendations of the governor for 2014-15. We have given you slides. We do not have slides on this screen, but hopefully you have all of the information that goes with this to start walking you through where we're at. You know, in summary, you know, MMB has been through a lot of activities trying to find ways to help run our operations better and ultimately help state government run better. It's a big charge, and we with our sister agencies take that very seriously, collaborating, working with other agencies to find ways to run the operations of state government more effectively. That means that it's always a balancing act. There's a set of tensions that come with that. But I think we've navigated that fairly well. Ultimately, trying to update and improve our systems capability, finding ways to use information more effectively, and helping find ways of managing management strategies best as possible. As you see on the first slide, it says MMB, and it's sort of a paraphrase of our mission statement, which is information and services to improve state government. And the kinds of things that we do, you know, run the gamut from getting information, presenting information of the overall state financials on Wall Street, sending out regular bulletins on internal controls and best practices on how to run your organization and keep track of the risks that a large organization might have, looking at the workforce issues and changes in demographics, capacities, and the systems that support our systems, as well as supporting decision-making here at the legislature and in the governor's office. The common element here is finding ways to take all of the activities in state government and getting data on it so that we have a core nugget of information and understanding what's going on, finding ways to aggregate that and ways to create information and reports that are useful to people, and ultimately supporting the decision-making process with analysis and understanding. Our functions, just in real quick recap, include that forecasting process, the accounting staff, budget staff, enterprise human resources, labor, as well as treasury. Underneath that is a significant amount of systems support that has been moved over to Minute, but supports our operations. As you see on page 2, the FTEs that support our activities, you'll see them spread out across the agency's portfolio. Accounting services is by number, where most of our largest number of people. That team, again, supports the accounting work, the payroll work of the state, the financial reporting work of the state. Second largest is the information services. That supports the statewide systems known as SWIFT, Semaphore. Semaphore is a personnel HR system, as well as smaller customized systems that support our activities. Behind that is a state employee group insurance program, not commonly thought of within the activities of the agency. It's really a standalone operation that's within our agency for sure, and that's what provides the CGIP program as well as the PEEP program to state employees or to local units of government. After that, the numbers start to continue drawing down. You see agency administration, human resources management, budget services, areas of other groups of people and activities. And really, the people are the core to how we get our work done. They handle those daily transactions and are the sort of the core of our success. We have continued to manage turnover, manage the workforce, and hopefully still, I think, come to the Capitol with a set of experts in a number of topics as you come up with questions and issues for us to deal with. The recommendations on the next page do not reflect the number of people and where our people are at. And that's largely because our budget reflects the income, inflow, and outflow of the insurance premiums of the CGIP program. So when you look at this graph, you say, well, you know, most of MMB is all about in health insurance. Well, it's not really the case. But the money flow includes the premiums coming in, the state share of health care costs, and the outflow of those expenses for all state employees, legislative, executive branch, and beyond. The financial footprint of the agency is actually much smaller when you think about the core activities that we do, whether those are the financial budgeting activities and other things. We're really quite dwarfed by that activity. We also have the Health Insurance Exchange, which is reporting to us right now. It's not shown on this chart. If that were to remain with the MMB, which we do not propose, do not ask for, but that is also, again, you know, one of those issues of a large operations that are sort of outside our core competencies. So the FTEs on the next page just show you sort of where we're coming from. And MMB believes and values taking its own medicine, which is when we ask people to make tough decisions or manage tightly, certainly our agency has been trying to do that to itself. It is an unusual day when you see recommendations coming before the legislature. If you go back in prior years, you'll not see a lot of large budget initiatives coming from our agency. We view ourselves as the opportunity to leverage other activities to help coordinate and look for support from our sister agencies to get that done. We believe that after making some of those trade-offs between maximizing the effectiveness of some of our systems, shifting funds between different activities, and basically continuing to find ways of training people to do things better, that there are some competencies and systems that we think are going to be helping the state but can't be done within internal funds. So that is sort of the place where we come to you with some of the investment, some of the initiatives that are provided in the governor's budget recommendations. They come on the trail of the next page of some major, major projects for our agency and for the state as a whole. SWIFT is the replacement system for MAPS. It is the integrated financial tools that deals with all of the daily transactions and all of the complexities of the various business units that report to the state legislature.
Commissioner, we have a question from Senator Dietzer.
This is I'll have a few more, but thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, can you just for new people, what does SWIFT stand for? I mean, there's a lot of acronyms in here and throughout state government that if you're the newer people, sometimes we don't. It takes a minute for us to figure out what you're talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, you're absolutely right. I will try to keep the acronyms to a minimum. Statewide Integrated Financial Tools. But as I was describing, it is the accounting system that's the statewide accounting system and procurement system. So it is the place that on a day-to-day basis agencies will enter transactions, whether it is to buy a pencil whether it is to pay somebody in payroll or whether it is to make a grant to another entity. It is the record of it is our record of all the activity that goes on in the state.
Okay. All right. Good.
That
continue on. Will you, Commissioner?
That system received a $65 million appropriation during the 2009 session. The new accounting system and procurement and reporting system did go live on July 1, 2011. And it really has been designed to continue meeting state government's needs and look at the business processes that can maximize some of our effectiveness. It is using stable, off-the-shelf technology. It's not a homegrown system. And that is one of those real choices that states encounter because it's not a large enough sector that there's a lot of off-the-shelf software. But the siren call of writing your own code runs into the problems and ongoing operating costs of updates, of any kind of modifications, and the complexities that go with that. We went towards the more vanilla route, trying to take something that was off the shelf and work through that. It does include and vastly improves our technology platform, includes better security than we've had before, and really allows us to have additional functionality, additional integration with other side systems going forward. And that's part of what we're going to be talking about going ahead, is how can we use one set of information and not spend our time having interfaces, but have a integrated financial transactions HR suite that works together. The budgeting system, another acronym on its heels, but it is the budget and planning system, is a separate operation, taking the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of transactions on a daily basis in the accounting system and summarizing all of that activity in an annual snapshot for the legislature and for the governor to build upon to make budget decisions. This was really done, and you don't see an appropriation for this because it really was a homegrown effort. We had a problem of a burning platform. The burning platform was BBS, the biennial budget system. It no longer would work. Even if we kept the old software, the old accounting system, it might have been functional, but that was highly questionable. With the change in accounting systems, we knew that was not going to be the case. So this agency basically dedicated what it could put together and carry forward, dedicated it to it, worked with other agencies, and said, we have a common need here to express the governor's budget in a new way, in a new platform. And together, we put together this budgeting system and this budgeting tool. The first phase of the system was really...
Senator Dietzick.
Okay, I don't know. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. And I appreciate all the work that went into a lot of these books, having come from local government. I know putting budget materials together for the elected body is takes a lot of work and a lot of time, so I appreciate that. But coming from local government, where we provided a ton of detail to give the elected officials to help them make decisions, I don't know. I have questions on the books and on this, and I don't know when the chairman wants me to start or when you want me to start, because I can just give you some examples of where this is not working, at least for me, and I don't know if this is the appropriate time.
Well, Senator Dietzick, I think that it's always appropriate time. Now, are you talking about the BPAS system or the SWIFT system?
Well, it's this book, so I don't know.
Oh, it's the book. All right.
Where
okay.
It fits.
Yeah, Commissioner, I think this probably is as good a time as any to start.
Absolutely.
Right, go ahead,
Thank
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So I'm not picking on the Arts Board, but if we go to the page on the Arts Board, and I'll say this document that you handed out has a lot of information, and so this was, I haven't finished reading it, but this is helpful. But if you go to, like, the Arts Board section, and you go to, they're not really page numbers that I can find, but it's where it's the page that has the FTEs. It says in 2013 we had 15.3 FTEs, and then 2015 it's 3.5. And so, and then I cannot find in here any explanation of did we lose you know, 10 people, 12 people? Are they, what happened to those employees? Because there's no description in here. Were they grant employees? Are they legacy money employees? And so they're not counted in the FTEs moving forward because they don't know if they'll get the money. And so that's just one example. Then if you go back on the previous page that's not numbered, there's a balance forward in of 203 and a balance forward out of 207, but I can't, and I'm not an accountant.
Where are you?
I'm in the arts board, and so it would be the pages aren't numbered, 1, 2, 3, 4, the fifth page. So the top says sources and liens for the arts board, and there's a under other state funds, it's a balance forward in. Yeah, the 203, and then down below it's 207. But I can't, what is that balance forward in? And then why does the balance forward out not match up? And then what's the flexible money here? What is statutorily required money? What is appropriated money that needs to be reappropriated? And where's the, as we're looking to put together the next budget, where's the flexible money? Again, the FTEs, you know, I'd like to know how are they shifting? Why did they shift? And that's just one example in here. So I don't.
So we're talking about the SWIFT.
Yeah.
Which one are we talking about here?
Mr. Chair, Senator, great questions, and happy to start getting into this because what we're talking about is the budgeting system.
Okay.
And that is, again, kind of a, in Minnesota and other states, really, is taking the detail of the accounting system and presenting it and trying to get a snapshot so that you have different views of it that are not really usually achievable within the accounting context because there's really different purposes. This is a presentation and management kind of questions at a single point in time as opposed to, I think, the information that you get through the accounting system. They are related, though, because it is built on the accounting structure of they're single accounting structure, and so they're kind of related.
Okay. Commissioner Ann, Senator Rest.
The budgeting tools are different than the budgeting software is different, as I understand it, than the integrated accounting system. It's a different software. Is that correct or not correct?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator, they actually are off the same vendor. They are different pieces of software, the SWIFT
and
financials.
So Mr. Chairman, so their interoperability is at what degree of, at what degree? What percent? I mean, are they 100% interoperable or not? And the reason why I ask that and it comes up is, like in the Transportation Committee, you know, we were just our Tax Committee, I guess it was, we were talking about how some of the 800 megahertz systems in the counties only are the federal ones, and some are armor within the state, but they have a pretty good degree of interoperability that they can talk to one another and so forth. Not perfect, but they can talk with one another. So how good are these, how good is the, are the two software systems so that you can answer Senator Dietzick's questions?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, my name is Margaret Kelly. I'm State Budget Director. I'm going to take a stab at this question. The goal is for these systems to be interoperable. We take the data out of the accounting system and load it into the budget system. We are working to make that integration seamless. It's not quite there yet. The goal would be that with the third phase of the system improvement, we're just in the first phase right now, that we would be able to take the information from the budget system and load it back up into the accounting system to make for a full loop. So that is the goal. They don't speak directly to each other right now, but we are able to load the data from the accounting system into the budget system, so that becomes the basis of how we build the budget and report on the budget.
Senator Rest?
And Mr. Chairman, I once again brought your audit of your internal controls, but which on the SWIFT system, which was not the best, but I think but I'm not going to go into it. You'll be happy to know, because I think Senator Dietzick's questions are far more important at this point. But I am concerned that those findings get resolved, and SWIFT's been operating for 18 months, and you ought to be getting the bugs out.
Mr. Chair.
Do you want to continue, Senator Dietzick? Go ahead and respond, Commissioner.
Great. Mr. Chair, Senator Dietzick, because I don't think we've gotten to your questions yet. And so, you know, first of all, I think the budget book and its function should be a book of questions. It should provide information that leads to great questions like the Senator posed about, well, what's happening? Why is the carryout going to be greater? You know, and if you look at the table, you'll see that the sources of funds and the uses of funds don't match. They're two different. I think there's one rounding different. We're down to the thousands of dollars. The bottom line is they didn't spend quite as much as they took in that year. As a result, the carry forward out is different. That's the detailed kinds of questions and conversations we would hope that these budget documents could have. The sources and uses view that you're looking at here isn't something that was available in the previous system. You weren't able to understand the totality of an organization and have those kinds of conversations. And we hope that the types of data that are available in the book and also in reports work for you. And there's a very important strategic question here in terms of the books that you see in front of you, which is, should we print out every table available, including some that probably have lots of zeros on them, or should we try to provide a management-level summary that starts the conversation and allows fiscal staff, agency staff, and others to have a conversation about exactly what question is appropriate for which agency. Because the financials of transportation are significantly different than the Arts Board and are significantly different than Department of Education. But for the first time, at least we've got a system that can span those different places and provide a common set of information that starts that conversation.
Question, Senator Dietzick?
I mean, I appreciate that, and I understand that there are different needs to show different things from different agencies and different departments, but it still gets to, there's a lot of, when you have a lot of new senators here, and there's a lot of just, you know, general info that's you know, missing. And again, I appreciate all the work that has gone into this, because I've helped put these together before. But coming from that background, again, some of the stuff that I think that at least would be helpful to me is how much of this money is flexible? What are the statutory requirements for each department? And then in yours, you know, you just went over your slide where you showed the breakdown of where all the FTEs are. And so some of that might be helpful. Again, it may vary from agency to agency, but how many employees, you know, how many employees handle, you know, in, you know, pick a department. So in transportation, how many employees are in this area? How many employees are in that area? And then, you know, is that changing and why? Or on one of these, again, it was they had a huge increase or another decrease, and it was because the employees were transferring to Minute. But that's not explained in here, and so it, you know, the question was, well, is this a budget decision? There was one where it was like a three-employee loss, and so we didn't know, well, is that how they're absorbing inflation and health insurance? Or then on the next one, it was a 70-employee loss, and, well, it turns out that's, they're shifting to Minute. But it's not explained in here, where your budget here, you kind of went into and had a little more explanation. And so I don't know how you get some of this, you know, into here so that it can better help us. And maybe not everybody wants it, but it's just, you know, and again, I appreciate all the work the employees did, because I know how hard this is to put all this together. And, you know, you have, we have a ton of agencies and departments in just this division, and there's a bunch of divisions. It's still very hard to make budget decisions when we don't know where our flexibility is. So, thank you.
Mr. Chair,
yes,
Senator.
Commissioner.
I appreciate that, the concerns and comments, because It is a question, as you well know, of finding what's the right spot of data and information for each individual questioner. And what we're trying to get to is at least to a place where that database and the information access is understood by your legislative staff, all members, the public, and so that systems change is requiring a lot of learning. I believe, and I think our department believes, that this database, this approach, will certainly highlight some of the highest level questions, but also give lower level information, whether through reports or supplemental information like you showed, so that we can get at it depending on which place you want to engage. You know, in the past, when we talked with stakeholders, the comment was common, if not unanimous, that we don't use the books. That while there was a comfort level to having the books, they weren't the basis for decision-making because they were too cumbersome, there was too much narrative, couldn't get to the questions that they wanted. There was comfort in that because it was still a 3,000-page behemoth that people at least recognized. So leaving that behind and getting to just a 2,000-page document is I think, raising understandable questions. I believe that whether it's available instantly or through reports, you can still get at some of those same.
Commissioner, I was just going to ask Mr. Lundin, who's kind of our expert here. How have you gotten everything you need out of it, or out of the SWIFT, or the accounting? Or?
Well, I will admit it's been frustrating with the new system, and kind of the reporting has been kind of frustrating, but MMB has been working with us, but I still think we have a ways to go to get all the information that we want.
Okay. Good enough. Go on, Commissioner. Thank you.
Great. And, Mr. Chair, are there specific pieces of information that you currently don't have that you're looking for?
Mr. Lundin, is there anything that you're looking for that, since you kind of transferred to us, so, you know?
Well, I think just in putting the spreadsheet together, I think the reporting has been kind of difficult to get the information sometimes broken out in, you know, the ways we need it, the direct versus the statutory appropriations.
I don't know. When you're getting into the other funds.
I know I had a conversation with some of your staff the other day. I was trying to look at the Gambling Control Board and getting some more information than was in the departmental earnings, and I had difficulty getting at that. I know they'd sent me back some reports, and it was hard to piece the information together. And so, I mean, I realize some of it's a learning and understanding all the logic behind it, but it takes time, and sometimes it is frustrating.
Very good. Mr. Chair, and yes. I appreciate that, and it is a frustrating and, I think, change for all sides of trying to make sure that the new data structure, the new reporting tools works. On the statutory versus direct appropriations, I know that is something that's already under development, and we'll have that.
Good, and it's obviously not just us, because we've only got all these little departments, you know. It isn't, but there is some departments that have some pretty complicated stuff.
Yep.
You know it better than I do. I mean.
Well, and Mr. Chair, we certainly knew that pretty much every biennium we have concerns and criticisms about the books or the information and the accessibility, and by changing it, we knew we were completely walking into it. Yeah. Because before, tradition was our best safety argument, just tradition. That's what we do in Minnesota. That being said, I really appreciate the efforts of staff and having conversations about what the system would do over the summer, over the previous years with legislative staff, and the feedback and painstaking work that they've done with consultants to try and develop the system, and all the while the agency basically footing the cost of this and basically foregoing other options in order to develop it.
All right, let's move on.
Senator
Dietzick has one more question.
Just one more short question.
Well, another question, because I'm sure it won't be the last one.
Yeah, I'll try to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to thank Mr. Lundin, because I did go through the books and did bombard him with a bunch of these questions, and so that's why he bombarded your staff. So thank you, Mr. Lindeen, and thank you to your staff. Because I understand not everybody does go through the books, but is this a possibility once the system gets up and running that those people that do actually read the books and may like additional data so that we don't have to waste paper and print out thousands and thousands, that there would be access to key stakeholders to go online and look at that?
Mr. Chair, Senator.
Ms. Kelly, yeah.
As we become more experienced with this system, the reportability out of the system is only going to improve. So the example that we talked about earlier, direct appropriation via statutory appropriation, that reporting wasn't available at the time the governor's budget was released because it's not a decision point in the governor's budget process. But knowing that it's a decision point in the legislative process, we have been working to create that report and should be able to release it with the governor's supplemental budget. So as our experience with the system matures, as your staff experience with the system matures, reportability is only going to improve. All the information is in the system that folks are looking for. The question is how to get it out of the system and how much of that do we actually print in a document itself. In addition to that, we continue to work with the software vendor to make the system, to make the software work better for us. So there are complexities in that. The reporting that we would like to do would generate 10 pages of blank information in order to get to one line with the number that you want. And we think that that's not valuable to put in the document at this point in time. And so we continue to work with the vendor to try and generate reports that will be useful and presentable in a public document and a decision-making document. So I fully anticipate that 2 years from now, things will look different.
Thank you, Drake. Go ahead, Commissioner.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just looking and appreciate the conversation because really it is part of, you know, the strategic plan on the next page. This fall, we had a lot of conversations. This summer, we had a lot of conversations within our agency of trying to assess where do we go from here, because really MMB, while I can say those three letters, Minnesota Management and Budget, very quickly and easily, is actually the result of a merger of two agencies, the Finance Department and the Employee Relations Department, along with the consulting practices of management analysis out of administration. And really, we've sort of matured as an agency, putting those together. And the question is, where do we go from here? And as you see here, some of the things that we came up with through those discussions was to continue to maintain and enhance statewide systems, building on that core IT infrastructure, developing a sense of collaboration across the agency, that the conversations and the culture of one unit isn't always matching with that of another one, and they've solved different problems with different tools, and how can we cross-pollinate those lessons learned. Determining the most critical data and information. Sometimes we can drown ourselves with the level of detail and level of specificity. Can we extract ourselves and look at what are the key issues that the decision makers are looking for, provide ideas for that kind of information, and ultimately create a model of recruitment and retention plan, both within the agency and ultimately within the enterprise? Those are some of the challenges we have going forward that affect our agency's operations, but also affect all other state agencies. And I should say, when we succeed, typically those things have impacts in other places. Example was the SWIFT investment, some $60 million put in to build a system, to implement it, and yet the other month we had a conversation with the Department of Human Services. They and their auditors were able to identify about $139 million of federal revenue that they hadn't claimed yet, because of the information, the detail, and the granularity that was now available in the SWIFT. The new business process, the new data, allowed them to claim more than $130 million that was included in the last forecast. So in a way, you know, the SWIFT project has already yielded results in the state budget that helped not only pay for it, but helped pay off some of the school shift. These are the things that you don't get in the state government committee. Unfortunately, you only get to invest, and the benefits tend to go in other places. But it is part of the reason why we think we want to continue that process, so that when we're able to refund financing, it helps pension systems, or it helps other elements of state government because we're able to lower the cost of borrowing. Those are the kinds of things that we want to do. Ultimately, addressing the changing workforce, something common across state agencies, the demands for information, finding standards and performance levels that are important for both managers and decision makers alike. And I use the word performance very specifically because we're trying to orient the budget discussion towards performance so that it's not a once, how do you divide up the pie and the resources, but really, what did he do with it? What are the results that go with it? And that's part of the information you get. Opportunities to learn and improve. So the governor's recommendations for the department are on the next page. Number one is statewide budget system development. We've got work to do. We know we have work to do on the budgeting tool. We've gotten it up. It successfully ran, but we know we've got work to continue on phase two in reporting and getting people understanding it. But there's other pieces of information that are still on a very, very old and unintegrated platform, like fiscal notes. The data that you use to make your decisions on individual bills, those are one-offs that aren't integrated into the budget systems. They aren't integrated into tracking. We would like to do that. Capital budget system, the same thing. Can we start to pull this information together? So developing phases two and three of the budgeting system includes some of the functions that you see here. But from where the agency's budget is at this point, we don't have carry forward. We don't see that we're going to be able to self-finance any of this or any more than we're already planning to. And so we're asking for an appropriation to continue forward with this work. It is if you see value in it, this is what we estimate the cost to be. We'd be happy to walk through the details of this initiative, but really it is to continue getting more modern tools so that the fiscal notes, the capital budget, and other things can be more easily done, and you have a better data to make your decisions on.
So, Commissioner, what you're telling us in recommendation one is that you need another $4.5 million to continue to improve the system on some of the things that we're talking here in the first three bullets. Okay.
And basically, you see on the third bullet a number of functions, number of reports, pieces of information that aren't included in the current budget software. What we were able to do was load in accounting data. We were able to provide the statutory requirements for the biennial budget document, but what we couldn't get to were some of these additional pieces of monthly revenue updates, finding ways to do salary projections for agencies, finding ways to support legislative tracking more directly. There are pieces that we can and should build toward, but they aren't pieces of information that directly migrate from the accounting system. These are other business processes that we would like to build out. The second recommendation is results management. The conversation about budget and finances and what the dollars are is a good one. It's a necessary one, and we think we're starting to provide some of the footings for that. But there's still a question of how do you facilitate that conversation about results and what happens to the appropriation once it is made. We in the administration are working on better government, trying across the board to incorporate lean processes, incorporate follow-up questions and coordination across agencies to get better results. The work on integrating IT within Minute is a key example, but there are plenty more bubbling up across the enterprise. The question we have is how do we keep that going? It's a good one-time kind of push that we've had so far, but the question is, do we want to institutionalize it? Do you want to institutionalize it in the budget process, in the ongoing reporting and decision-making process? And our answer is yes. That if we take a look at the high-level metrics of what we want to achieve as a state, whether it's closing the achievement gap or improving our credit rating or any number of other things, can we continue to track and talk about what's working and what's not working? And we'd like to start pushing out that conversation. The elements that are included here are what we would ask for state support to have some staff, to have some small amount of information and data gathering to basically facilitate that. And basically build off of a dashboard that we've built internally. Hopefully we'll be talking about more very soon about sort of how at the top level, what are we trying to achieve as a state government, but also within an agency, how do we support each of those elements? The third recommendation on the next page is to develop and deploy a talent management system. As I said before, that our agency is only as good as its people, and I think that's true across the enterprise. We have been, for an organization, for the largest employer in the state to not have a talent management system, to be able to understand what kind of training, what kind of opportunities, what kind of discussions are going on, even between the employer and the employees, is surprising. We have needs to better manage the inflow of resumes, find out what competencies are there. There's a lot of work to be done here. If we're serious about continuing the workforce and managing that in a competent way, there's systems elements to the suite of tools that we built off of SWIFT that we should invest in. And would recommend going there. Anne O'Brien, our Enterprise Human Resources Director, is here as well if you'd like to ask more questions about this. It is certainly part of our overarching strategy of looking at the state workforce as an asset, trying to, however, not just say it's an asset and that's nice, but to say what is the information, what are the metrics, what are the pieces of needs that we need to be addressing at an agency level and at a statewide level. And finally, basically within that enterprise human resources team, helping rebuild that team. The number of people and the number of activities that they support continues to get larger and more complex. We want to start to simplify the classification system. We want to look at ways to respond to some of the HR needs in agencies on a more proactive basis. And we are looking for support to build out that team again to get to there. So those are the areas that we want to get to, hopefully not necessarily for what happens at MMB, but it's really a question of can we support agencies better? Because we know that when the HR function gets drawn down in another agency, or when there's problems, they end up calling us, and we're responding to the fires and the investigations of the day rather than helping people have sustainable and successful policies internally. The last item is a net no change. It is the State Employee Group Insurance Program, CGIP. And basically what happens is there are people in agencies that work with employees to work through directing their insurance options and information. And what we'd like to do is try to centralize that, reducing basically on a net basis, say we're going to reduce our costs of the CGIP program and the administrative load, but what we'd still like to do is ask for that back so that we could centralize some of that work out of the agencies so that we have better consistency and better sort of understandability of the policies of the insurance program. So that is, I'm trying to rush through these just in knowing that you didn't intend to have me at the table for the entire meeting, but would be happy to go into more detail on any of these.
Well, so and so if you go, I realize this is pretty simplified, particularly for the Bureau of Management budget. But so if we go to this agency snapshot at the back with the governor's recommendations, maybe you could just kind of go down there, and so we know what we spent in the last biennium and what you're thinking that we ought to be spending in this biennium. Per the governor's recommendations.
Very good. You're leading me to my closing. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because what you see here is sort of combining a couple of different pieces of information you've seen so far in terms of the FTEs, the full-time equivalents that are by area. The shaded areas sort of show where we are asking for new investments and support in building out some of the budget services operations and data systems, building out some of the enterprise human resources systems, and you see some of the incremental changes in FTEs and the changes in the recommendations there. The general fund spending, as well as the other fund spending that are recommended in the governor's budget, as well as the totals. So that gives you sort of a snapshot of putting together the number of people, the dollars that are requested and recommended for the total budget. Mr. Munkwitz is here as well. If you want to drill into any of those figures, we can certainly talk in more detail about any of them. If you're looking for a biennium to biennium comparison, you know, our agency pretty much, I'm going to say the bottom line is we don't have a lot, we don't have forecasted programs, we don't have a lot of one-time activity except for SWIFT, and that was far enough in the rearview mirror that
that really doesn't mess up the appropriation comparisons. I don't want to say any more about that.
Mr. Monkowitz, do you want to talk a little bit about the appropriation and how it kind of flows from the last biennium? Or?
Mr. Chair and members, I certainly can. We provided this slide to you last time, and that was for a current biennium look. So I took the same slide and I just updated it. So if you looked at accounting services, for instance, the FTEs are not changing from the current biennium. The general fund spending's not changing from the current biennium. The only changes that are being made or proposed are in the budget services, where we would add 3 FTEs. We would add the $4.5 million in one-time money to build out the budget system, and we would add $1.225 million to the base for the support and maintenance of the new systems. Otherwise, economic analysis, treasury management analysis, those are the same as the current biennium. Enterprise human resources, I just saw that I made a big mistake here, so I want to point that out to you. We would be adding 9 FTEs. We would be adding $4 million one-time money to build out that talent management system, but we would be adding $900,000 to the base to build out the team, as Commissioner Showalter talked about, not $9 million.
There's a decimal point there.
Oh, there is a decimal. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it just doesn't say 0.9.
I'm not seeing that. Okay, it's 0.9 million, so 900,000. Mr. Chair, those are the only changes from the current biennium.
Mr. Monkowitz, would you identify yourself on the tape just for...
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dennis Monkowitz, the CFO at MMB.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, Commissioner, we appreciate everybody coming by and can't promise that we won't ask you to stop by again when we're in the midst of deliberations, but we appreciate you putting up with our questions, and we'll have some more at some point, I'm sure.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'd be happy to come back at any point in time that's useful, because this summary gives you, I think, a taste of where we're trying to go and why we want to get there, but I completely would understand if you have more questions or want to understand a little bit more about the problems we're trying to react to.
All right. We appreciate it. And just before you leave, any other questions here of the committee? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So next we have the Department of Revenue, and leading the crew is Matt Mossman, Deputy Commissioner of Revenue, and Terry Steenblock, Assistant Commissioner. Welcome to you both. As you know, the procedure here, you need to identify yourself and then go for it.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you for having us by today to talk about our agency and budget recommendations. We're going to be using 2 handouts that are in your packets today to supplement the budget pages that have been provided in your budget books. They're the color pages, one that gives an overview and some background on the Department of Revenue so that you can have some background to understand our budget recommendations in context, and then the second page we'll get to overviews our budget recommendations. I want to start with the top of the, and so the, I'm following on the page that says mission and strategies and has the little bubbles on the front of it, the department overview. Just to kind of give you an understanding of what the department does and what we, from a business plan perspective, see as our focus right now. In 2011, we did a stepping back and to review our mission and strategies and our business plan to make sure we were aligned with the expectations not only of policymakers like yourselves and the governor, but also what we were hearing from taxpayers and customers in terms of our priorities. And I just want to highlight a couple of those things because they relate to and drive our budget recommendations today also. One of the things that we really sought to emphasize in our mission statement moving forward is voluntary compliance and making sure that we were doing not only all we could do to enforce the tax laws and ensure compliance, but to do all that we could to reach out to taxpayers and customers to provide education and information that folks need to voluntarily comply. As well, we wanted to make sure we were placing an emphasis on modernizing our systems so that we could deliver not only better, more convenient, and user-friendly services, but hopefully to do so whenever possible at a lower cost as well. To engage employees in identifying and making those improvements, and to emphasize all along the way customer service and drawing on the feedback that we were hearing either from taxpayers through our call centers, through our customer surveys or other through our website, other information sources that we have that we get information on to use that input to make improvements into our system and certainly to perform our work in a way that recognizes our overall role as an agency in not only the success of the state but of state government, including measuring and managing for results. I want to, on that last point, before I move on to kind of the by the numbers section of this handout, one of the key pieces of our mission statement that we added, which primarily focused on the tax system and compliance previously, was that we do work to gain compliance with tax laws to fund public services for Minnesota. And in the past, our mission statement hasn't always connected why we do what we do at the Department of Revenue to how we interact with other state agencies to fund programs all across state government and local government and the importance of the work that we do in that regard. On the by the numbers section, and I will try as well to link this to the budget pages, but just to give an overview of the Department of Revenue in terms of its size, its budget base, and its employees, our fiscal 14-15 biennial budget base is $296.6 million. That includes $280.8 million from the general fund. 95% of our budget comes from the general fund and the remaining 5% from special and dedicated funds. We get no federal funds at the Department of Revenue. Of that $280.8 million, about $268 million, $267 million of that money is direct general fund appropriations from the legislature in two programs. $217 million would be the appropriation base for tax system management, and $60 million would be the budget base for debt collection management. And then we have four open appropriations that total about $4 million, that are in the general fund as well. Just to highlight over on the right-hand side, the non-general fund appropriations, the Department of Revenue gets and utilizes small amounts of money from a number of dedicated revenue sources and taxes that we collect at the department, and this just reflects our cost of administration for the Health Care Access Fund, for the Minnesota Care Tax, Highway User Fund taxes through the collection of gas tax and other Highway User Fund taxes, and Environmental Fund taxes. And then we have a small amount of dedicated receipts related to the local option sales tax and other interactions that we have. Our FTE employee count for our base for fiscal 2013 is 1,580 employees, 97% of which are funded on the general fund, 1,539 employees, and about the remainder that are funded on those non-general fund sources that I just described. Then moving on, Mr. Chair and members, just to give a little bit of background as to the nature of the work that we do, the department touches about 3.7 million individual income taxpayers every year. We work with 204,000 corporations and S-corporations and partnerships to collect taxes, 680,000 property tax refund claimants, including both homeowners and renters, 284 businesses that collect and remit sales taxes to the state, 48,000 fiduciary income taxpayers and withholding taxpayers of 105,000 and other relationships, obviously with tax preparers and a number of other stakeholders that facilitate the revenue collection process across the state. We deliver forms to about 4 million people, process about 10.8 million returns each year, answer about 678,000 phone calls and 41,000 emails, and you can see the rest of the items there in the blue box. So obviously our footprint across the state and our engagement with not only Minnesotans, but folks who are required to pay taxes that are outside the state of Minnesota, as well as rather broad. And one of the new things in particular that...
Senator Dietzick has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just looking at this, and so it's just kind of more of an informational question. Are you finding the trend towards emails on the answer 678 phone calls and 41,000 emails, is that trending towards more emails, or do you just have such complicated questions that it's still a lot of phone work?
I think it's
Commission
both.
Management.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Dietzick. I think it's both. We certainly get emails been around for a while, so I think that transition has largely occurred. We get a lot of questions through both. We actually get a lot of questions through our website, and so we get questions that are submitted to us through that. And more recently, just in this past year, we've rolled out both in social media, which we've so far had good success with, and frankly, probably touching a whole different segment of the taxpaying population, and oftentimes are able to surprise people that we are not only out there, but that we're monitoring it as we try to each day and on a kind of regular basis, so that we're answering questions within a reasonable amount of time frame when they show up out there also.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the 204,000 corporations, S-corps, and partnerships, any idea how many of those are Minnesota versus out of state?
Commissioner Mossman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Gazelka, I do not have that breakdown off the top of my head. Obviously, with the, I believe there's about 30,000 C-corporations in Minnesota, so anyone that has sales into Minnesota and Nexus is subject to the Minnesota corporate income tax. So obviously there's corporations based all over the country that are responsible for paying some amount of corporate tax to the state of Minnesota. I don't have that number off the top of my head.
Senator Gazalka.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, if you could get that, I'd appreciate it. I heard a number somewhere around 50,000, but I just want to, just if I figure you guys got it, so I'd love to see it.
Mr. Chair and members, then moving on, just on the bottom, one of the last key points in terms of that we're trying to work towards is we've always done quite a bit of measurement at the Department of Revenue, but to refresh and refocus our measurements and our dashboard internally as well as somewhat externally. And so what you see on the bottom of the page is currently under development, but the direction we're headed at this point in terms of identifying some key areas of service technology, fairness, and efficiency where we can highlight the department's progress in terms of meeting its expectations from a measurement standpoint. If you flip over that first page then, Mr. Chair and members, I did want to touch base and check in. Certainly the legislature in 2011 put in place the 10th initiative for tax compliance initiative and that we've had in the last decade, and also some expectation around tax analytics and what you have here. You may be familiar in November, in January, the department issued a update to the legislature, the second of two required updates that included our performance on the current tax compliance initiative through the end of November. This actually updates those numbers, and so if you look under the compliance update here, to date, through January of 2013, we've collected $67.1 million of the $82.3 million that is expected to be collected during the initiative, which is about 82% of the goal, and we're about 79% of the way through the biennium. So we are on track to meet that compliance expectation around the return on investment of about $6 to $1 of appropriation. Despite that, and I want to return a little bit to the voluntary compliance point here, the graph that you see underneath that is despite really a decade of compliance initiatives and this recent aggressive compliance initiative as well, the department collects 96.9% of the revenues it collects through voluntary compliance. So we really want to underscore that and have that be our priority for the next biennium. As we have been out having contact with more taxpayers in order to meet compliance initiatives, we certainly hear more and more concerns about small change audits. And so both from a standpoint of tax analytics, trying to deploy different technologies to identify our audit leads in a way that promotes greater efficiency in the completion of audits, but also most taxpayers, frankly, want to do it correctly. And a lot of times when we're out conducting audits, the taxpayer had every intent to do it correctly and just didn't miss something or else. So our goal really is to try and help educate taxpayers and leave folks more educated, more able to complete their taxes correctly in the future. And so that is our priority moving forward. From an analytics, tax analytics update, as you are familiar, I think the governor and the Department of Administration did pursue a master vendor contract beginning in the early part of 2011 with a master contract that was put in place for a wide variety of vendors across state government to provide tax analytics services in December of 2011. Most of those contracts were signed. And there was 10 of those vendors that were identified that were able to provide tax-related analytics services. We met initially with all of them and conducted proof of concepts, and we are deploying 6 new analytics models as a result of our work with those vendors, and this here table summarizes those that have already been deployed and those that are currently in development and some of the functionality that they have going along with them. We were required to put in place a state and federal reciprocal program, which we implemented in May of 2012. And then just on the bottom of this page, we were looking for a way to highlight a number of the projects that we have going on at the department where we are trying to put a priority on improving the way we deliver and make our systems available to taxpayers in a way that hopefully makes them more customer service friendly, user oriented. And so what you have here at the bottom is just a ticker, really, of the number of the things that we either have recently completed in the last year, year and a half, or projects that we have underway right now. So if you get a chance, you can scan that. If you have any questions on any of those projects, we'd be happy to provide more information. I would transition, Mr. Chair and members, then to the second handout that we provided just to provide you an overview of the budget recommendations. And what I'll do is I'll highlight the recommendations, and then Commissioner Steenblok will walk through some of the specifics of recommendations as well. The budget change items, so I'm looking at the top of the page that says budget change items. Again, our base for fiscal year 2014-15 biennium would be, for the general fund would be, for all funds would be $296.592 million. And we propose 6 changes, all of which would affect the general fund. The first is a collection of efficiency and simplification measures in various areas of tax administration that we believe can save $4.9 million over the course of the biennium. We do have 2 minor spending requests, the first of which is we have a lot of success helping elderly and low and income individuals to file their taxes through the voluntary assistance programs that we help support with taxpayer assistance grants. Right now, we fund about $200,000. We get an appropriation of $200,000 each year, and we would like to double that appropriation to $200,000 by $200,000 to a total of $400,000 a year. And then you can see we have an electronic wage levy payment and disclosure recommendation that would request some changes in law and would save $448,000 for the biennium. And a one-time funding request that we have to provide counties with some tax technical grants to help facilitate some efficiencies and changes we're trying to put in place in terms of how we receive data from the counties. And then 2 other items that have modest fiscal impact that I'll get to in a little bit more detail later. So those are on net with the 2 increases, we would save about $4.5 million for the general fund in the next biennium with these recommendations.
Questions? Commissioner Steenblatt.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, my name is Terry Steenblatt, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Individual Taxes. And I'm just going to give you a brief overview of what these changes mean. Under number one, that same sheet that's titled Budget Change Items, under number one, we have Tax System Simplification and Efficiencies. The first item listed on that list is Automated Collection Actions. When we have taxpayers who owe delinquent tax debt and they don't respond to notices that the department has sent to them, we have the authority to issue levies and liens and those types of actions. In the past, that was a complete manual process where a human had to literally issue that and then send it out. Now we have automated that process within the system, so those notifications are automatically sent within the system, allowing the collectors to focus on other collection activities. In the area of the centralized print return mail, this past year we conducted a lien activity where we looked at how we were generating and sending outgoing mail out and what we were doing with return mail that came back in. And the decision was made as part of the lien activity to centralize that. In the past, it used to be each division handled their own outgoing and incoming mail. We have since centralized that, and in addition to centralizing it, we've been able to implement some technology, such as an electronic file from the post office to us, and some barcoding technology. So the cost savings associated with that would be in relation to centralizing that functionality and adding some technology enhancements. Replacing refund checks with debit cards. In January of 2014, the department will be transitioning from sending out paper refund checks to individual taxpayers to sending out a debit card. So taxpayers will have the option to either elect for a direct deposit or will send a debit card to the taxpayer. Now, we still have a lot of details to work through as far as the implementation of this functionality, but we do anticipate cost savings of approximately $475,000 transitioning from the paper to the debit card. You'll notice here as well we have the complete enhanced e-services. When the department implemented our integrated system, one of the pieces of functionality that came along with that was the ability for taxpayers to file and pay their returns electronically and access other account information. We have been able to implement that technology, so we no longer need a third-party vendor that was facilitating that process for us in the past. So that's why you see the cost savings associated with that.
Senator Gazalka.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Check to debit card, how does that save over $400,000? Is it because you hang on to some of the money longer as they use a debit card, or I'm just trying to think through how that saves money.
Commissioner Steenblatt.
Mr. Chair, Senator, the cost savings associated with that, in today's world, when we issue a paper check, the Department of Revenue has to touch it, and then it gets transitioned over to the Department of Minnesota Management and Budget, where it's touched, and then the Department of Deed actually issues the physical paper check. So we have three agencies that are currently involved in processing a paper check. We also have costs associated with the mailing of those checks. And as we transition into the debit card, the vendor assumes the responsibility, and we're actually able to issue the refunds quicker this using the debit card than using the paper check.
Okay. Thank you.
So Senator Gazalka, so and Commissioner Steenblatt, there isn't anything to do there with the for the float, so to speak.
No.
We're keeping the money, though. Okay.
Just curious.
No, I thought of that, too. Yeah. All right. Continue. All right. Thanks, Commissioner.
On the back of the page, you'll see taxpayer assistance grants, and this is Deputy Commissioner referenced that we are requesting some funding for taxpayer assistance grants. Right now, the agency facilitates kind of like an RFP process every August where nonprofit organizations can apply to receive grant money to help low-income, non-English-speaking, or other disadvantaged individuals file returns. And the agency is requesting to increase that grant from $200,000 annually to $400,000 annually. And we believe that will help not only promote tax compliance, but it does provide a safe and secure, accurate facility for individuals to have their returns filed. And then lastly, before I turn it over to Deputy Mossman. I want to just briefly touch on the electronic wage levy payments and disclosure. This will require a legislative change, but at the beginning I mentioned that the agency has the ability, when taxpayers don't respond, to issue levies. One of the levies that we issue is a wage levy, so we send that to the employer, and the employer is required to submit a wage levy disclosure back to us, telling us what the income is and how much we can expect to receive from the employer. And then they're also required to send us payments on whatever the particular pay date is of that employer. And so what we are asking here is for legislation that would allow that to be handled electronically versus a paper. As I also mentioned, we implemented the new e-services system. And so every business taxpayer that has withholding or employees uses that system now to file their withholding return. We're asking them to use that same system to send their electronic wage levy disclosure. And they only need to send that to us once unless something changes. And then any payments, submitting them electronically to us as well. And we think that'll be beneficial to the employer, to the agency, and to the taxpayer, because we can process those quicker and we reduce overpayments, which can occur in today's world.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Steinbach, on the taxpayer assistant grants increase, you're asking for a $400,000 increase in the grants. Do those taxpayers ever kind of, once they've learned how to do it themselves, go away?
Commissioner Steenbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator, just a couple of things. Just want to clarify, we're asking for $200,000 additional a year, so $400,000 for the biennium. And actually, some of these sites, they use the money to promote people filing individually. So what they'll do is they have the site set up where the individual can file their own return with assistance. And so there's somebody there that can help them so that they can become self-sufficient and do it on their own in future years if they would like to.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Anderson.
Ms. Steinbach, do you have a track how many people are repeat users of this system over and over and over and never get off of getting assistance?
Commissioner Steinbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't have any statistics on the numbers that are repeat filers. That's something we could look into. The one thing that we're really trying to promote is we gain the benefit of more accurate returns as individuals are using the services that are there. But I don't at this time have any stats on who's a repeat filer year after year.
Senator Stumpf.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. This isn't really a question for, I don't think it is, but on the information that you handed out, the Department of Revenue's biannual budget, looks like it came out of the budget book, and it has a page number on it. problem I have is when I go to the larger budget book and try to follow along, there are no page numbers.
So Senator Stumpf, we're not sure if this is the Department of Revenue or the MMB that you're asking the question to, kind of.
Well, I'm just wondering who we can trust for numbers here. It is confusing.
Do either one of the commissioners want to address that?
Chair, Moss, Senator Stumpf, our numbers do line up with MMB's numbers. So if I knew what page you were looking at, I would be able to help you out. You're looking at a description of the change items, I take it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
That's correct.
So the handout that we have been walking through is in the same, we made sure it was in the same order, I believe, as the change items that are in your budget, in the budget book. So if you were to look at the what would be the seventh, I'm sorry, right now we're talking about the third change item in the budget book, electronic wage levy payments and disclosures. Bring us to the same place at all?
Senator Stubbs.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Mossman, I think it does, but it looks like the descriptive text is different, and I'm not sure which one is actually the more current. It looks like the one that you handed out is more traditional in terms of the recommendation, the rationale and background, performance measures. In the other text, it doesn't track quite as closely. Like,
well, Senator Stumpf, Mr. Bergen was telling me that these are actually, these pages you have are actually changes that came from the MMB.
More recent, Mr. More. Chairman, more recent changes.
Okay. Correct, Senator Stumpf.
Mr. Chair and Senator...
Commissioner Mossman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, I think I can help. You're right. I'm tracking now. There was a request for some additional supplemental information after the budget books initially came out that followed along with the more traditional format of the budget books you have seen in previous bienniums. And so I believe what you're looking at is that our agency, along with other agencies, did complete an additional... document, and that you're looking at that document, in which case we would still be looking at the third, well, it's my page 3, but it's the third change item in there. You start with the tax system simplification, then you have the taxpayer assistance grants, and the next change item is the electronic wage levy payment disclosures.
Okay.
All
right. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, go ahead.
Oh, good. Commissioner Mossman, go ahead.
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, I'll just quickly walk through the remaining items, and then we can stand for any questions that you have. We have a fairly a couple of data projects actually going on in our property tax division. But the one that we have here today is we get about 10 different The property taxes is administered locally, but we obviously are responsible for providing oversight to that tax system. And as a result of both the calculations that we're required to do, as well as the oversight we're required to do, we get about 10 different data submissions from the counties during the course of any year. And those data submissions tend to be on different timelines. We get them in different formats. The way they come in doesn't really allow them to go into any sort of automatically go into any sort of relational database that can be used or manipulated in a way that helps either do analysis or, frankly, to facilitate much in the way of oversight. And so the data project that we have going on in the division is to both consolidate and to get different data, more extensive data on a parcel level basis from the counties, and to get that in a common format in a way that can go into a relational database that is both more useful, we hope, to them, more efficient from their perspective, more efficient from our perspective. There will be some front-end costs, and what we're asking for is $300,000 of appropriation to help provide some one-time assistance to counties or their consortiums to help facilitate that process on the front end of the data submission. Then, Mr. Chair and members, the final two and a half items. The item number 5 on here, continuous electronic payments. There's currently a provision in law that says that if your tax liability, your business tax liability exceeded $10,000 in the previous year, that you must file electronically this year. But then if it falls below that, then you might not have to file electronically the next year. And we've tried to improve our system so that it's simplified and easy and convenient to file electronically, frankly, every year. But this just would make an adjustment of law that says if you have been required to file electronically at some point, then you are always required to file electronically. in the future, and there might be some modest impact to that. And then the auto theft surcharge program, we already administer or collect the auto theft surcharge through an interagency agreement with the Department of Public Safety, but the language for the surcharge itself is in their statutes rather than ours. We've worked with the agencies. This is just an interagency efficiency measure that would move the requirement to collect the surcharge for the auto theft surcharge become a responsibility directly of the Department of Revenue. It would allow us to audit that activity at the same time we're auditing the insurers for the other taxes that we collect from them. And obviously the money would still go, in this case, to the Department of Commerce for the auto theft program in the Special Revenue Fund. And then finally, a savings item that already showed up in the November forecast, and that is that the bonds and the loan money that was supported by bond proceeds that the department had to fund the integrated tax system that was initiated about 5 or 6 years ago, we were able to do that over the course of a number of years and some efficiencies, and also to reorder the timeline of the activities that we did. There's a few rollout activities that we still have to do in the area of reporting, but that system is in place. We were able to do it at a somewhat lower cost, and so there's a bond repayment schedule in law that we no longer need because the MMB has sufficient funds from us to repay those bonds, and so this just asked for a repeal of that schedule. And that's it, Mr. Chair, members. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Mostyn, regarding property tax technical grants, you have a $300,000 request for grants to the counties. Are all the counties going to get this, or are some counties already up to speed on in relationship to what you're asking them to do with this here, or is this a blanket check that every county is going to get a certain amount of money to help in the technological helping and you are reporting in the property tax system?
Commissioner Mosman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, I do not have a specific answer to that yet. We have talked about we have not refined the way that that's going to happen yet, and so we're happy to talk to the legislature about that going forward if there's some specific parameters that want to be put on that. In the past, when we've had some data projects kind of similar to this, we've either given sometimes a flat amount, so regardless of size, every county got the same amount, or base it on population or some sort of actual cost assessment. We've been working with their consortium. The counties ought not be blindsided by this. We've been working with their consortiums to develop this number, which is who does most of the data programming work for them. This number came from some conversations with them. But we have not refined how the money would go out yet at this point.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you're projecting this to be in 2014 to be used. What happens if that money be put back into the general fund if it's not used?
Commissioner Mosman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, that's correct. It would be the same. It would be available for use. It would be appropriated in fiscal 14, available for use for fiscal 14-15, but if it was not spent at the end of fiscal 15, it would go back to the general fund.
Senator Deems, do you have a question? Okay. Any other questions for either Commissioner Mosman or Commissioner Steenblok? Now, thank you very much. We appreciate
Mr. Chair, members.
Your input. We'll be talking to you later. Is there anybody else who has any additional testimony? Hi.
Good afternoon.
Identify yourself.
Yes, I'm Tracy Fishman. I'm the Executive Director for Accountability Minnesota. And I will be very brief, as I know I stand between you and maybe some additional testimony, but you're running a little late, which I understand. Accountability Minnesota is a nonprofit organization. We provide free tax assistance as well as financial services for low and moderate income taxpayers directly in the metro area. We are a volunteer-driven organization. We train and certify hundreds of volunteers. We have a volunteer force of 563 volunteers. So I want to make clear that the taxpayer assistance grants go to organizations that are very much volunteer-driven, so the return on investment is really great. At Accountability Minnesota, as I said, we serve about 12,445 taxpayers a year with 560 volunteers, and we returned in 2012 $22.6 million in tax refunds and credits. The earned income tax credit is one of the refundable tax credits. It's a federal tax credit and is considered to be the nation's largest anti-poverty tool for low and moderate income working families. The Minnesota Working Family Credit is another tax credit that doesn't completely mirror the earned income tax credit, but eligibility for the Minnesota Working Family Credit is the same. And I want to just provide you with some highlights about the impact of these programs in your communities. Commissioner Steenblok said, the request for funding is at $400,000, and I should start by saying I urge you to support this $400,000 appropriation for this program. We are, as I said, the largest provider of free tax services in the Twin Cities, but the program currently supports 39 grantees throughout the state of Minnesota. And I want to just be clear that this is a program that affects the taxpayers in your district. It supports hardworking families. And to the earlier question that Senator Anderson asked, at Accountability Minnesota, we to date in 2013 have supported almost 100 taxpayers in preparing their own taxes. So in addition to providing free tax assistance, we're supporting those that want to learn how to provide their own taxes. And moreover, we also provide financial services by utilizing what we call the money moment of tax time so that when people come in, they learn that they may be getting significant tax refunds if they don't owe, because we also ensure that people are meeting their tax obligations. They come in, they get refunds, and we want to take advantage of what we call, as I said, that money moment. So we link people, if they don't have bank accounts, to free savings accounts at financial institutions, mostly credit unions and community banks on site. We provide some basic financial education. We pull credit reports. We screen people for public benefits. And we offer some basic education around money management and debt reduction. I want to just give you some highlights, and forgive me that I'm just giving a couple of examples. But Senator Rest, for example, we served 377 taxpayers in your district. There were almost 5,500 taxpayers who claimed nearly $11 million in the earned income tax credit in your district. 376 of those taxpayers utilized free tax sites. Some of them may have prepared their own taxes, and far too many of them paid sometimes exorbitant fees to have their taxes prepared. I want to be clear that this program really supports people who may not have any other place to turn if they have more complicated returns and can't prepare their own taxes. I would imagine that some of you at this table turn somewhere else to get your taxes prepared. And so I just want to urge you to support the $400,000 request. I do have some fact sheets that I'll make sure are available for all of you on both this program overall and the impact in your respective districts. And I will open it up for any questions that you might have.
Any questions for Ms. Fishman?
Yes.
Go ahead, Senator Rest.
Thank you. Well, I can't tell you what an enthusiastic supporter I am of the work that Accountability Minnesota does. And it goes back, to the early 1980s when I not only worked at one of these tax preparation sites as a CPA, but also was really grateful to the firm that I worked at because they encouraged us to take on these pro bono clients so that they could take advantage of the working family credit and the renter's credit in particular, because we knew that the dollars that were returned to these taxpayers as refunds were going to get spent in our local communities. And so, you know, this kind of an appropriation, the dollars that it, by helping them that have more sites and with seniors and low-income folks and whatever, really is a tremendous benefit to our local communities economically because of the dollars that return there. So I hope that we will look favorably on this request to maintain, expand, however you want to talk about it, this this program. And it certainly, as a CPA, was probably the most rewarding experience I had when you could show somebody, you know, you're going to get $300 back. And they, you know, could immediately start talking about, you know, there's clothes, there's food, and this is going to help with the rent. And it was an extremely gratifying experience, and I salute Accountability Minnesota. And you didn't even need to tell me the statistic for my district.
Other questions, comments for Ms. Fishman? No, thank you very much.
Thank
we
you.
Appreciate you being here. All right, so we are on our overview of the Office of Enterprise Technology, better known as MINET. And Ms. Parnell, it's good to have you here. Good to have you back again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I was here about a month ago, and if you recall, it was quite a lengthy presentation. I can promise you I'm going to be shorter today. And more to the point in terms of our budget overview. So I do want to, though, remind you about a couple of things. I know that you have a lot of information that passes this committee, so I've revived a couple of slides just to remind you of what we're in the middle of and the complexity of all that and what we're all about these days. So, again, we have a new organization about 2,100 people, 22 different offices, 90 locations, 2,000-plus applications that we're supporting, and a combined annual operating budget of $451 million. It's been quite the challenge, but we feel like we've made a great deal of progress. We've had a great deal of support, and we feel that we are going to be very successful in this undertaking. So what is it that we do? Well, having inherited all IT services for the state, we do things like connect all the agencies in the state, as well as all the higher ed entities in MNSCU through our network. Now, this doesn't mean that we own the actual physical network, but we do own the contracts that we have with the telcos all over the state. You just heard about the tax system, the electronic tax system. You heard about the SWIFT system and the BPAS system. And all of those are systems that we now support and work on developing and maintaining. We manage the IT tools like enterprise email, enterprise collaborative tools that make state employees pretty productive. And we build and manage the applications that allow citizens to get their services online instead of in line. So a good example of that is the Department of Natural Resources has a third-party provided website where I, as a citizen, can go in and reserve campgrounds ahead of time. Now, what happens is when I do that, I pay a convenience fee online, and what happens is that that third party collects that convenience fee, and DNR actually gets that service for nothing because it's collected through the end user. And, of course, we are the data stewards. We, of course, do not determine who has access to databases, but we know where all the data is. We know how to protect it, and we're the ones that are called on to change any access requirements in all of these systems. So you have seen this before as well. Our next biennial budget has a spend of $902 million. We don't have a good deal of money coming from the general fund, and this is the aggregation of all of the agencies and their funding sources for the IT that we provide them. Again, I threw this in just because it's, I think, a useful reminder. Sounds like an awful lot of money for IT, but we have not committed to doing less IT. We've committed to doing it smarter. And I think that it's useful to know sort of where we stand in benchmarking with both the public sector and the private sector. This doesn't mean that we have an intention of, you know, driving all this cost up, but it does sort of give a reality check on where we are with our peers in the public and private sector. So we have an existing project portfolio, responsibility that our Statute 16E gives us is the requirement to really put together a state project management office and have the responsibility for consistency in project management, for risk management for all these projects, et cetera. Right now, we are carrying $212 million worth of project in our portfolio. That number is driven up, actually, by the Minnesota Health Exchange and by the MNLARS, which are pretty large projects. However, in the next biennium, in the governor's office, there are $92.5 million worth of projects in the budget that really are projects that are going to be carried out by Minute Services.
We have a question from Senator Dietzick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had mentioned earlier that there's a lot of acronyms that government uses, and you just mentioned MNLARS, which I'm not familiar with, so could you share what that is? Thank you.
Ms. Parnell.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I apologize. Actually, we are so used to acronyms in IT that we call them TLAs, three-letter acronyms, which is kind of sad. MNLARS is a replacement for the Minnesota Motor Vehicle System, which is pretty old. Pretty outdated. It has been talked about and planned for the last, I think, 2 or 3 years, but it's a replacement of basically the, I think it stands for Minnesota Licensing and Registration System.
Thank you, Ms. Parnell. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this gets a little bit complex, but the $92.5 million worth of projects are projects that are requested by agencies, and for the purposes of budgeting, those projects are going through the agency that's requesting that project, and the budgeting is being handled by the committees that they present information to. However, these, for the most part, are either entirely IT projects, or they are projects that have a large component of IT, but there's also some business expense implied in the actual request for dollars. So we have vetted all of these projects. We know that they are pretty accurate in their projection of what it's going to cost. We know that they are not duplicating any other systems in the state. We know that they are not interfering or colliding with our plans for IT consolidation and finding the efficiencies that we need to do. So we're very comfortable supporting all of these projects on behalf of agencies. So our change items, you will notice that we have been asked both for a general fund reduction based on the all IT budget, as well as a reduction based on our past OET budget. So as a measure of explanation, when OET was first set up, which was, I think, 6 or 7 years ago, there was money allocated both to the requirements and the statutory obligations of the Office of the CIO for tracking projects, for making sure that risk assessment was done, et cetera. And there was also money that was appropriated for developing a security program. So the goal was that setting up this initial OET organization was starting down the path of a collective approach to IT in the state. So that IT security budget is something that we are pretty comfortable taking a cut in. And the reason for that is we do not expect to add costs for agencies, we expect through IT consolidation to find enough efficiencies that their costs will either stay the same or go down for those kinds of core services. I think the same is true in the general fund reduction. We are not mature enough as an organization to go around to the budgets of agencies that are IT-related and make decisions on our own that we were going to make cuts. Instead, we know that we can find those efficiencies and redeploy some of those efficiency dollars back into security for all agencies. One of the things that IT consolidation changes is that we are no longer promoting a good security program. We are actually really responsible for making sure that that security exists and is funded accurately and actually is baked into everything that we do. So another change item is a request for legislation around an e-government and innovation partnership. And I always try to have a picture of my dog in as many presentations as I give as possible. I've been doing that since I started this job. So this is my dog, Sage. She is a rescued Australian Shepherd. And the reason she's there is I have a story about e-government, and that is when I rescued her about 5 years ago, my only way of getting a dog license was either to send in an application in the mail or go down to the courthouse. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't have stamps in my house. I don't want to go downtown to the city hall to get a license. So I was sitting one day reading the Star and Tribune in the morning, and I saw an article on how the fine for not having your dog's license was jumping to $200. And I thought, wow, that's pretty steep. I better read this. So I did read it, and it turns out that they had put the whole dog licensing application online. And I could sit there and do it in 10 minutes. 2 days later, I got the dog tags in the mail. And I love that because I knew someone in the city of Minneapolis was thinking about how can I make her life easier. And so I think we need more of that in the state of Minnesota. I think we maybe have little pockets of it, but we do not have a concerted effort to doing that. And we as an agency now want the same sort of permission to charge that third-party convenience fee like I paid to get my dog license so that we can set up those same kinds of contracts with third parties. And that's it for our budget.
Any questions for Ms. Parnell? Yes, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Parnell, it mentions here under change item or proposal, major IT component projects include, and you've got the last one, the health insurance exchange. How much money is coming from the feds to help in implementing the ACA?
Ms. Parnell.
Mr. Chair, Senator, you know, I can't recall off the top of my head the total amount of the federal funding for the health exchange. I can tell you that a good portion of that is for IT expenses, but I just don't have at the top of my head what that amount is.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, I know this isn't the transportation area, but I've had a lot of complaints about people who buy cars and literally have to wait months in order to get the license tab or to get the title back for after they bought. And in some cases, they waited so long that you know, things happen to, you know, they get you know, just practically don't know if it, you know, you get the a ticket or something, it goes to the previous owner or something, and I'm just wondering if with the modernization of the technology services, is there anything that can speed that area up?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I assume you're talking about the driver's license and motor vehicle.
Right.
I, by the way, bought a car in the last year and went through some of that myself, so I understand the length of time and some of the frustration. I can tell you that, you know, I have sort of stepped into this whole MNLARS project kind of in midstream and kind of late. The CIO, the Chief Information Officer for the Department of Public Safety, reports directly to me. He is my canary in the mine. So he is very engaged in this project. There's a very specific roadmap to getting to the efficiencies, and we are trying to turn them out around the way that state agencies do IT projects. In my experience, based on what I saw when I entered into state government, there is had been an approach of, you know, there would be an RFP that was put out and people would spend a year or two responding to that RFP. We would hire some software development big company and, you know, 4 years later they would deliver something that we might like or we might not. Well, there are far more agile and up-to-date software development methodologies. And I think in the MNLARS system, we initially, in the first year, I think took a good deal of time to negotiate that contract because we were asking them to do it in a different way. And it's not always to a vendor's benefit. So I can tell you that in this particular instance, we are using those more agile development methodologies. We have functionality coming out in four different stages. I think the first one is permits. The second one is maybe registration. Anyway, so over the course of the next 4 years, we'll have that pretty much fully functional. But it also has to take into account the existing business process in the state for management of licensing. And we have, as I understand it, deputies all over the state that sort of manage that from their different perspectives. So it's a little more complex, I think, than a lot of projects maybe are based on the need to take into account that business process that isn't so easily changed, but there's hope. It's happening, so.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, I might just add.
Could you identify yourself?
My name is John Eichten. I'm Legislative Director for Minute Services. I would just add, I'm sure Driver and Vehicle Services could speak to this in a more informed way, but I do know that in past years, the legislature passed law requiring an expedited title or providing for that with an increased fee that would allow someone to get their vehicle title more quickly than the normal process would. And my understanding is that a lot of the dealers and individual buyers have been utilizing that expedited title and that it's created a backlog in terms of the non-expedited titles. So it's something I'm aware of, but certainly not an expert.
Senator Stumpf.
Well, you know, they talk, the dealers talk about that option, but in my estimation is you're paying for the transfer anyway. Why should you pay an extra $25 to get it expedited? And I just think that there should be a faster way to you know, bring that backlog up. I mean, dealers in other states, and I don't know if it has to do with the volume or what, but in other states it happens quite fast. Mm-hmm. And here in Minnesota, it can take, you know, upwards of 6 months, which is really way beyond most reasonable transactions.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Eichten.
Senator Stumpf, I think that's where the commissioner was leading in terms of the MNLARS system development and some functionality that might allow even those traditional non-expedited titles to move through more quickly.
Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Parnell Can you tell me, do you know if when the MNLAR system is updated, is that going to include the opportunity for real-time insurance information? So if I would get picked up for speeding, they could tell instantly if I'm driving a car with or without insurance. Do you know, will a provision for that or the option to address that be in that system?
Ms. Parnell.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I would consider that a business decision, and we would take our direction from the business leaders about whether or not that functionality would be built in. So I don't feel equipped to speak to that, but I'm sure that someone from the Department of Public Safety involved in MNLARS would be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you.
Other question for Ms. Parnell? If not, thank you very much, Ms. Parnell, for going over the budget. Feel like we know quite a bit about your department, believe me, after being with you. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members.
And members, Thursday's meeting agenda will be an overview of budget recommendations by the governor for Chicano Latino Affairs Council, Black Minnesotans Council, Asian Pacific Americans Council, PARA, TRA, and the Investment Board. Look forward to seeing you then. He's adjourned.